We're going to talk today about the basic needs of a wife. There was a pastor that was in the Navy before he became a pastor, and he noted that all the ships were female. They called them she. And he began to wonder, well, what do we call computers? Are they male or female? And he couldn't figure it out, so he appointed two task force, one made of women, one made of men. They were all computer geeks. Their assignment was to figure out if it should be a male or a female. And here's what he got back. The group of women recommended that the computers be referred to in the masculine gender. And by the way, he said, you have to give me at least four reasons. Here were their four reasons. It should be in a masculine gender. In order to get their attention, you have to turn them on. Two, they have a lot of data, but they're still clueless. Three, they're supposed to help you solve problems, but half the time they are the problem. And four, as soon as you commit to one, you realize if you'd waited a little longer, you could have gotten a better model. And then the men met together. They decided they should all be called by the feminine. They gave four reasons. Number one, no one but the Creator understands their internal logic. Two, the negative language they use to communicate with other computers is incomprehensible to everyone else. Three, even the smallest mistakes are stored up in long-term memory for later retrieval. And four, as soon as you commit to one, you find yourself spending half your paycheck on the accessories for it. Now, that little experiment illustrates right off the bat the differences between men and women. And we're totally different. It's like one woman said, I married an ideal, I got an ordeal, now I want a new deal. Just the differences create problems. Now we're going to talk today the basic needs of a wife. A guy who went to a seminar heard about the basic needs of a wife and he really was convicted and he thought, man, I got to do something about it. So he stopped and he bought his wife a dozen roses and he thought, that's not enough. He got two dozen roses. And then he got this big box of candy and he was so excited he came to the front door, knocked on the door with the two dozen roses and the big box of candy, and he was smiling and grinning, and his wife says, oh, great, I burnt the dinner, the tub is stopped up, the dog bit the kids, and now you come home drunk. If you're not in the habit of regularly meeting your mate's needs, you can be totally misunderstood. That guy was. Now listen to what Gary Smalley says, and this, by the way, is an excellent book, If Only He Knew. I really recommend this. It's called The Valuable Guide to Knowing and Understanding and Loving Your Wife. And he has a companion book that's called For Better or For Best. And this is a valuable guide to knowing and understanding and loving your husband. Now let me read just a little bit of what he has to say. He says, a lack of understanding about the general differences between men and women is the major cause of most problems in marriage. I would venture to say that most marital difficulties center around one fact. Men and women are totally different. The differences, emotional, mental, physical, are so extreme, without a concentrated effort to understand them, it's nearly impossible to have a happy marriage. A famous psychiatrist once said, after 30 years of studying women, I asked myself, what is it they really want? If this is the conclusion, just imagine how we feel about our wives. You may already be aware of some of the differences. Many, however, will come to a complete surprise. Do you know, for instance, that virtually every cell in the man's body has a chromosome makeup entirely different from those in a woman's body? How about the next one? Dr. James Dobson says there's a strong evidence indicating that the seat of the emotions in a man's brain is wired differently than a woman's. By virtue of these two differences, men and women are miles apart emotionally and physically. And then he makes four points. Women tend to be more personal than men, more personal in terms of relationships. Dr. Cecil Osborne, in his book, The Art of Understanding Your Mate, says women become an intimate part of the people they know and the things that surround them. Number three, because of a woman's emotional identity with people and places around her, she needs more time to adjust to change that affect her relationships. And four, men tend to express their hostility through physical violence, while women tend to be more verbally expressive. And then he lists over 100 differences between men and women. The big thesis is this, that you need to learn to love your mate the way they need to be loved. And it's usually the opposite or totally different from the way you need to be loved. So get your PhD on your mate's basic needs. So we're going to look at some basic needs. If these don't describe you, that's fine, because every couple is totally unique. But these are some basic overall needs. First, looking at the basic needs of a wife. And I have this thesis to run through it. It comes from a book by Larry Crabb. And about 8 years ago, my brother called me up, and he said, "I just read a book that changed my whole life. You got to read this book." And urged me to do it. Called back the next week. "Did you get the book yet?" "Nope." "Called back the next week. Got the book yet?" "Well, it's on my list." "Called back the next week. Read the book." "I finally got the book." He called back the next week. "Read the stinking book." "I read it. It really changed my life." And it's a book by Larry Crabb called The Marriage Builder. To save you going out and buying the book, here's his whole book in one sentence. In marriage, you're either a servant or a manipulator. Those are the only options available. You're either a servant or you're a manipulator. If you're a manipulator, you're focused on your needs and how to manipulate your mate to meet your needs. If you're a servant, your focus is on your mate's needs and how can I serve my mate. That's his whole thesis. So that's the thesis I want to build on. Understand your mate's needs and realize that in marriage, you took a vow to love and serve that person, to meet their needs. And you're the only person that can do it. You're on first string. And if you don't do it, it does great damage. So let's start with the wives and look at Ephesians 5:25. Let's read that one together. "Husbands, love your wives just as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her." Here's the first basic need. She needs the stability and direction of a spiritual leader. How many women listed on the basic needs, spiritual intimacy as one of your top three? Look at that, guys. That's very important to a woman. She needs the stability and direction of a spiritual leader. Now, that brings with it some roadblocks. A lot of women create stereotypes in their mind of what a spiritual leader is. And they bring with that a set of expectations. And if you bring that stereotype and expectations and stamp it on your mate, you're going to have great problems. Because every spiritual leader is unique. There are some common patterns, but it's a difficulty if you say, this is how he has to be a spiritual leader. Spiritual leaders, let's talk about what that is. A great definition of spiritual leadership I just read in a wonderful book called Spiritual Leadership by Henry Blackaby. He wrote the book Experiencing God. Here's his definition. I think it's right on the money. A spiritual leader moves people to God's agenda. That's it. Moves people to God's agenda. In the context of marriage, a spiritual leader moves his wife to God's agenda. Well, you cannot move anybody to God's agenda if you're not in tune with God. And three things always mark a spiritual leader. Always these three things are in common. Number one, a spiritual leader is constantly seeking after God. Everybody may do that in a unique way, but if you're a spiritual leader, what marks you is you're always seeking after God. The second thing that marks a spiritual leader is that you have convictions and you live by the convictions. A conviction is something that you just won't change. A preference is something you'll change when pressure comes. A spiritual leader has strong convictions, and they live by them, but it comes out of seeking God. Here's the third mark of a spiritual leader. This is key. Whatever he does in love. You can totally blow yourself out of the water spiritually if you don't do it in love. And one of the top needs of a woman is affection. And the number one command of the husband is love your wives. So you have to be a spiritual leader in love. There's a wonderful set of books I highly recommend. It's called The Power of a Praying Wife and The Power of a Praying Husband. Any of you familiar with these books? They're really good, aren't they? And this is all about spiritual leadership. I can tell you in our marriage of 29 years next week, praying together has been one of the primary things that has helped us. And when we've gone through some really deep waters, what has pulled us through is a commitment we made, and we actually put it in our wedding vows. And that commitment was, we will never go to sleep at night without praying together first. Now, I have to admit, there have been some nights where I said, bless this woman, amen. But we pray together every single night. And what that does is forces you to clean up your conflicts. And when you're praying with your mate, my brother describes it as looking down in the soul of your mate. You get real intimacy. Spiritual leadership is built on seeking God, having convictions you live by, and doing everything you do in love. It means that you're an example. You walk, you talk. It means that you are committed to building a friendship with your wife. It means that you're constantly growing, that you're not static, you're not stuck in a rut. And men, here's a key thing. It means that you have a pure heart. It means that you say no to pornography, you're not a girl watcher, that you communicate to your wife, I'm seeking God, and one way it shows up, I've got eyes for only you, and you can trust me with my eye gate. That means the world to a woman. It's by God's grace that I never got into pornography. I cannot tell you how many times my wife has told me, it means the world to me that you watch your eyes. I was very fortunate to grow up in a home where my dad was not a girl watcher. I never once saw him gawk at other women. But I'll tell you what I did see. He was all over my mother. I mean, he really had an attraction for her. And he communicated, you're it for me. And that set the context for great spiritual leadership. Second basic need, to know that she meets vital needs in your life that no other woman can meet. She meets vital needs in your life that no other woman can meet. In 1 Timothy chapter 3 and Titus chapter 1, it gives the character qualities, and they're over 20, for anyone who would be a spiritual leader in the local church. The one that is mentioned in 1 Timothy and in Titus for elders and deacons is this. And it's usually translated the husband of one wife. Here's what it literally means. A one-woman kind of man. Now, you can have that if you're single or if you're married. It's a character quality that I have eyes and heart for one woman. And your wife needs to know that. That you're communicating to her, I've made a decision in advance. You are it. And there are vital needs in my life that only you can meet. Your marriage partner, your wife, is the only one that you can have a sexual relationship with that God smiles on, and it doesn't bring guilt and shame and destruction. She's the only one that can meet that need. The decisions you make, your wife has insights that nobody else has because she knows you, she has your best interest at heart. And a man is a fool if he doesn't listen to his wife. And you need to communicate, I really value your opinion. You need to communicate, she is the one that knows your children and knows the unique interest of those children, has their best interest at heart. She's the only one that can meet that vital need in your life. Now, my dad, again, modeled that for me, and he was a real character, and he was a lot of fun in the home. But I grew up... And I saw him do this so many times, I can just see him going around the house doing like this. He'd kind of get a little thing going, and then sing a little song. He'd come up to my mother and start hugging on her, and he'd say, ain't no woman like the one I got. And he would sing the Four Tops song over and over and over again to her. He was always showing affection to her. And what it communicated is, man, my daddy loves my mama, and that's the one person for him. Now, when he died, I let a few months go by, and I went out and I found that Four Tops record, got it on record, and sent it to my mom. She wore that thing out and asked for another copy because she keeps remembering how he treated her during their married life. It means that you communicate she's first place in your life. Of going over it again, you're not a girl watcher, and you're not into pornography. You're excited about spending time with her. You don't do things like cut her in public or contradict her. You communicate, you meet vital needs in my life that only you can meet, and you're the one person I'm going to go to. Third basic need, to see and hear that you cherish and delight in her as a person. And both are important, to see it and to hear it. Now, men tend to put the focus on the first part. Hey, don't you see it? I mean, I told you I loved you when I married you. It still stands. I mean, don't you see I'm working hard? I'm paying the bills. I come home at night. Can't you see it? She needs to hear it also. It's very important she sees and hears. And here's the key word. You delight in her as a person. Almost every survey shows that a woman's self-image, a wife's self-image, is largely shaped by what she thinks her husband thinks of her. And that means a man has a tremendous power and influence over his wife. And that's why this is such a vital need, that she's regularly seeing, regularly hearing, I delight in you as a person. Look at Ephesians 5:29. Let's read that one together. For no one ever hated his own flesh, but nourishes and cherishes it, just as Christ does the church. In Colossians 3:19, it says, stop being harsh with your wife. In 1 Peter, it says, honor her, understand her, live with her as a fellow heir of the grace of life. That means it shows up in your schedule. One of the things, because my schedule is so intense that I learned the hard way in the early years of our marriage, came when I almost had a burnout in ministry. I was in a new church, had been at it about 4 years, and I gave it my heart and my soul, and frankly, I was neglecting my body and neglecting my home. And I almost crashed and ended up in a doctor's office. I'll never forget what he did with me. It's a Christian doctor. He listened to my whole story, and he just kind of went, looked at me like that, walked over and got his Bible, opened it up, and he put his finger to my chest and he preached to me. And he said, now you listen to me, young man. Are you listening to me? He said, listen, if you don't take the next 2 weeks off and get your act together, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to show up at your church Sunday morning, interrupt your sermon, and tell them how you're living. Do you want me to do that, young man? I mean, he laid it on me. And so I took 2 weeks off, and he gave me some suggestions. He said, here's what I recommend you do. He said, I'm busy too. I'm a doctor. He said, I learned this the hard way. He said, get your schedule out with your wife, and you answer this question. How much time do you need with her and your family every week as a bare minimum to have an excellent marriage? And lock it in. And then, after that's locked in, you do your ministry. You put your family first. I'm telling you, I've been riding on that for 25 years. It really made a difference. But it met a vital need. It communicates in a practical way to my wife, I am cherishing and delighting in you as a person. It shows up in a practical way. See and hear that you delight in her as a person. Husbands, love your wives and do not be embittered against them. By the way, I love Proverbs 5:18-19. It's one of my favorite verses because cherishing and delighting in her as a person, most men think of sex. Women don't think of that first. They think of warmth and affection and delight in me, not you've got an agenda just to get me in the bed. It makes a big difference. But look at Proverbs 5:18-19. Let's read this one together. Let your fountain be blessed and rejoice in the wife of your youth. As a loving hind and a graceful doe, let her breast satisfy you at all times and be exhilarated always with her love. Now, my wife and I like to name things in our home. And we decided years ago to name our bed. And we named it Vacation. I'm telling you, I love to be on vacation. It's my favorite place on the planet. Just to be there with her. Delighting in her. Now, I want you to listen again to some of the words from Gary Smalley. They're wise words. When you think of your mate, men, it's very easy to become negative. And you need to take what you view as a negative trait, because behind every negative is a positive, and turn it around. Let me give you some practical examples. You may say, she's noisy. How can you possibly turn that around positively? She's very alert and sociable. You may say she's touchy. No, she's sensitive. She's stingy. No, she's thrifty. She's talkative. No, she's expressive and dramatic. She's flirty. No, she's enthusiastic and cheerfully vital. She's too serious. No, she has strong convictions. She's too bold. No, she has strong convictions and uncompromising standards. She's rigid. No, she's well-disciplined and has strong convictions. She's overbearing. No, she's very confident. She's a dreamer. No, she's creative and imaginative. She's too fussy. No, she's organized and efficient. When you delight in your wife as a person, you're always trying to put a positive spin on it, not just a list of things that irritate you. Let's go to the fourth one. To know that you enjoy setting aside quality time for intimate conversation with her. 1 Peter 3:7. You husbands, live with your wives in an understanding way, literally according to knowledge, as with a weaker, a more precious, valuable, sensitive vessel. Here's a key thing. That you're aware of her even when your mind is on other things. You're aware of her presence. If she happens to call you, you're not irritated because you're interrupting me. Don't you know I'm busy here? I learn everything the hard way. And at my first church, before I had my blowout with the doctor that got to me, I used to stand at the back door every Sunday, and you know, you do that pastor thing. How are you? Good to see you. And it was my first church, wanted to make a great impression. And my wife would always be standing there next to me. And then I noticed suddenly she hated that. She didn't want to stand by me anymore. And I thought, what's wrong with you? She says, when's the last time you ever introduced me? Oh, well, I never did it. And what I communicated to her is what was important to me was other people and my agenda, not her. Communicate that she's important to you even if your mind is on other matters and that you enjoy quality conversation with her. Look at the fifth one. To see that you know and understand her as a woman. This one is so key, that you know and understand her as a woman. Women really respond to men who understand them. And when you understand them, you're aware of areas where she needs your protection and your eagerness to step in. Have you caught on to the principle of transference? Because a lot of us do this. And I'm going to tell you another story of how I blew this royally. Transference. I grew up in a great home, for my parents did it right. And here's what would happen every day when my dad would come home. I can just picture this. Dad would be on the way home, and Mom would tell us five kids, Dad's going to be home in about an hour. She would go, take a bath, get all cleaned up, dressed up, and then Dad came home. When he hit the front door, she was in his arms, and all the kids were hanging around his knees. I mean, it was a big deal. Daddy's home. Now, transference means that you take that scene and you think, that's the way it'll be in my home. Transference. And I remember I used to live in the parsonage next door, and I was having a really, really bad day. And one of those days where I was thinking, man, I remember how my daddy came home. I'm sure it's going to be that way for me. And I hit the door, and May was on the phone, and the oven was messed up, and she was irritated and didn't even acknowledge my presence. So I got hurt and thought, well, shoot, stomped out of the room and went to go after one of my sons. He was playing a video game, didn't acknowledge my presence. So I thought, well, I'll go to the other son. He was working on a math problem, didn't even know I was there. You know what I did? I was so furious, I went out the kitchen door, slammed the door, got in my car, and peeled rubber out of the parking lot. And went a few blocks away and thought, I feel like a total idiot. And I started thinking, what is the problem here? And I just thought about it a long time, and I realized what I had done. First, I walked in the door, totally self-centered. Then I transferred into this family the way it was in my family, and then expected them to bow down and read my mind and drop everything to serve me. So I started doing something. It changed everything. I said, from now on the way home, here's what I'll do. I will always pray for my family. I'll pray for them by name. And when I hit the door, I'm going to say, Lord, who can I serve? Now, it's amazing how my family changed. The problem was me. And that goes right back to what we're saying. See that you know and understand her as a woman. That means that your mindset is that you want to serve her. You're sensitive to her. A lot of times they don't need our mouth, they need our shoulder. I remember Barbara Bush being interviewed several years ago when her husband was president. And she got teary-eyed and told the story about losing one of their children. And then she said, George Bush just came and held me. He never said anything. And then she said this, I'll always be indebted to George Bush. He understands me. Now, he communicated volumes by saying nothing, but just being there for her. There's an assignment we give every couple that gets married, and you may want to write this assignment down and try it. We call it the bag and history assignment. And here's what you do. You get a brown paper bag and some crayons, each one of you do, and then on your brown paper bag on the outside, you draw the dinner table you grew up around, like you're looking down on it. And then you put all the family members around the dinner table. You're doing it in crayons because you want to color this. This is my green brother, my black sister, whatever, and they all have meanings, and you color the thing. You're looking down on this table. And then you have a bag because inside the bag you want to put object lessons from your growing up years. Second part of the assignment, get an 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper, just use the front and back, and write down your life story. This is me when I was born up to where I met you. This is my life. And then go on a date and share your bag in history and ask hundreds of questions. And I'm telling you, you can get a great education. You're going to marry what's on that bag. You married that history. And if you spend time trying to understand your unique mate, it makes all the difference in the world. That's a basic need of a woman. Personalities are different. You may be a beaver personality. If anything's going to be done, it's going to be done right, and it's got to be precise, and it must be done timely. That may be the way you are. The other one you're married to might be an otter. An otter doesn't think about stuff like that. They want to play. Hey, if we're late, let's have a party over being late. I mean, it's going to work out. It's okay. Now, what do you do with a budget if you have the couple I worked with years ago where he was a beaver and she was an otter? Here's the way he approached the budget. This is our budget. You spent 5 cents more than you should have and just on her all the time. Her budget, blow the budget. I just want to play. Now, how in the world can they get along? They came up with a budget, and I made some recommendations to him. I said, look, you know how your wife approaches the budget. She loves to kind of play with money. So here's what you ought to do. Plan in your budget so every once in a while you can do something like this. Put a note under her pillow with a little envelope, put 50 bucks in there and say, just go blow it. Have fun. That'll communicate volumes to her. You understand. But what could she do to this beaver who cares about every penny? I said, every once in a while, put an envelope under his pillow with a note and 50 bucks in it and says, guess what? I didn't spend this. There's a way to love your mate the way they need to be loved. Look at the sixth need. To see that you are making investments to explore and fulfill her world. You're thinking about her needs and you're making investments so that you are expanding and fulfilling her world. In the Song of Solomon, we use that as a homework assignment for people to take on their honeymoon, read the Song of Solomon to each other. In the first chapter, it talks about him making gold ornaments for his wife and a jewelry. He didn't give her a football or a fishing rod. He gave gold ornaments. He tried to think of something that would appeal to her and made investments in that. And Jesus modeled this for her. It means that you're a provider and you're thinking about how to meet her needs. Now, in our culture, I know we have a lot of couples that both work. But I believe the biblical model is that the man's the provider. And one of the worst things men are doing in our culture is putting tons of pressure on the wife to work and also take care of the home and also be a good wife. And that puts a major pressure on her. Provide for her and protect her and have a good budget so that you remove that pressure. And then you're investing in her world, not putting pressure on her, but delighting in meeting her needs. Put this all together. It means that you need to have an interview with your mate today. Go back through the basic needs you listed, look at how they are different, and then determine today, I'm going to get my PhD on my mate. I want to understand the unique needs of my wife, and I'm going to be the one person that will meet those needs. That's my goal in life. And reconciling our spirit is absolutely key to do that. If you don't have a reconciled spirit, you're thinking about your needs, and you're crippled to being a servant to your mate. I remember one time we were in Oregon, we were on vacation, and we decided to go visit another church, and I did what a lot of people do every Sunday. We had a knockdown, drag-out fight on the way to church. And we got there, and you know how you're sitting there like, don't touch me, and you're trying to worship God at the same time. And we stood up to sing, and I hated what this guy did. He said, okay, turn to your mate, take your mate's hand, look them right in the eye, and now sing to them, I love you with the love of the Lord. And there we were, I love you with the love of the Lord. But we finally got it straight. You might have to do that with your mate. Heal the spirit. And then you're in a position to serve your mate. So here's what I'd like you to do, men. I'd like you to turn to your mate and do a little interview. I'd like you to take her sheets where she listed her needs. I'd like you to try to get more information. I'd like you to take the 6 basic needs we listed here, get her opinion, and just interview her for 5 or 10 minutes to start getting your PhD on your mate. And when you're done with the interview, I'd like you to pray a prayer of blessing on your mate and commit yourself to meeting her vital needs. And then we'll